I'm Jim DeLang. I'm the pastor of St. Francis Lutheran Church in San Francisco. And it's a century-old church. And for the last 20 years or so, why this congregation has been openly welcoming of gay and lesbian people. I've been the pastor there nearly 7 years, and about half of the members of our church are gay or gay men or lesbian women. And we are right in the heart of the 100,000 or so gay people who are and lesbian women who are part of our city, in a particular community called the Castro. This is the third session that we've done on this issue. In the first session, we related some of my personal experiences, and I tried to relate to you the personal experiences of what it means to be gay or lesbian, as people have come out and related some of the stories of people in our congregation that have been told to me. Yesterday we went through some of the biblical materials and talked about that. And in both of these sessions we mentioned that there are four possible stances that one can take toward homosexuality. One is a rejecting punitive stance, which says that gay people are criminals and should be punished for their criminal acts. The other was rejecting and non-punitive, which is basically that gay people should not be punished for who they are. But this is a free country and people are free to do whatever they want, but not in my neighborhood kind of thing. And they should stay hidden and not, and we don't want anything to do with them. The third is a qualified acceptance, which is that we feel that gay people are equal to heterosexual people, but that homosexuality is inferior to heterosexuality and is something that we recognize cannot be changed, but nonetheless it is not anything to be celebrated. And so therefore gay people should not be denied their civil rights, but at the same time in the church, for example, we have standards, and they should not serve as pastors or as teachers of children or so on. And the fourth is possible is a unqualified acceptance, and saying basically that gay and lesbian people are no different than straight people. This is that some people are right-handed and some people are left-handed. Some people have brown eyes, some people have blue eyes. And that's not any more different than that. It just happens that 90% of the people in the world are heterosexual, and anywhere from 7 to 10% are homosexual. Recommend some books for you to take a look at. One is Homosexuality in the Church, which is a pamphlet that's in the bookstore. And you might want to look at this. This outlines these four possible stances and explains them further and the rationale behind each. Another is a study that was put out by the Lutheran Church in America a year ago, and is now part of the documents that belong to the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. And it's a report of the Advisory Committee of Issues Related to Homosexuality. And this is a very thorough and well-done report that has been done by a commission of physicians and people who have been involved with the gay issue, theologians, and they held hearings throughout the United States. So this is a very good study. Another book is the book by the New Testament on Homosexuality by Robin Scroggs, which is very readable and has some very, very fine documentation in there about the Greco-Roman world into which Paul wrote his statements, three statements, about three little sentences actually in the Bible about homosexuality. In 1969, 19 years ago, there was a raid on a gay bar in New York City called Stonewall. And it was a police raid that had been done many, many times before, in which police came into a gay bar and started arresting people and harassing and so on. It was something that had been done many, many times. This was a gay bar that was in a section of New York City, which you might call that the gay people who went there were people who were kind of on some of the fringes of what you would call the gay populace, whereas most gay people did not go there. A riot ensued, and what the result was that the patrons of the bar started attacking the police, and they went outside, and the police locked themselves in the bar, and the people on the outside were joined by hundreds of people just in a spontaneous kind of riot, and began to throw bottles and so on like this into the bar, whereupon the bar was severely damaged, and the liquor license their liquor license was suspended or what have you. In the week that followed, the bar was repaired and opened the following Saturday. This was at the end of June, and what they did is that the owners started giving away drinks because they couldn't sell drinks, so they started giving them away, and it was and as a result of that, there was a crowd around and a parade developed, and they organized in that first week the first gay parade. It was in New York City, and people walked down the street. Thousands of gay people and other people, clergy and others, in support of gay people and gay rights. And people threw things at them from the apartments above and yelled epithets. And one of the people who walked in that parade was a woman holding up a sign that said, "A parent who loves her gay son." And that was the beginning of an organization called Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, of which I'm a member, and we have chapters all over the country. And it's made up of parents who have gay or lesbian children. And today I would like to show you a video entitled Parents Come Out, and it talks about their personal experiences with their gay and lesbian children, and part of that is also a book, which was a book put out of that the same experience by Betty Fairchild and Nancy Hayward, Now That You Know What Every Parent Should Know About Homosexuality, and it is a very readable and good book, and this is also in the bookstore. So if you could cut the lights, we will show the video and turn your chairs around. The video takes about 20 minutes, I think, 25. How's that? Is it dark enough?
Yeah.
Does everybody see? Need that one up there? Could somebody catch that one? This was broadcast on a local television station in Oakland, and I taped it.
Good evening, I'm Charles Layton, sitting in tonight for Ian Zella, and this is All the People. In tonight's program, we'll be talking with a group of parents whose children are gay, and we'll explore the sometimes difficult and painful process of how their children came out to them. We'll begin the show by having a look at a half-hour tape locally produced by Pat Blumenthal and Aaron Cooper for the support group Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. So here it is, their tape, Parents Come Out.
It was devastating, not that it wasn't because I didn't already know or feel, and just the idea that I was finally confronted with it. And when I listened to him, I really didn't have that much to say to him other than I had suspected and that it was going to be something rather difficult. Was he ready to come out to people and to feel the rejection, because that's what was going to happen. And I had to get that out. I walked out of the room because I worked nights and my bath water was ran and I was in dearly need of that bath. I could have drowned. I soaked down in that bath. My heart was busting out. I just tears were in my eyes. I was just so hurt, so sad, you know.
In 71, I came to visit again because he was having some problems, physical problems connected with the accident. And I was here again for 3 or 4 months. Never meeting any women. And when I finally went home, I started wondering about this. And I tried to talk to his father, and he had nothing to do with this. Then I went to my pastor, and he suggested that if it was necessary that I know, why, he wanted to know why it was necessary that I know. And I wrote him, I told him, because I wanted my son to know that I loved him. It didn't make any difference to me if he was gay or straight. In 76, he was home for a reunion, and the night before he left to come back to San Francisco, I asked him if he was gay. He said, "Mother, I thought you always knew. The only reason I never told you was because I was afraid I would become isolated from you and people I love most."
I think it's always a shock to hear it. 20 years ago, there was anything about homosexuality was negative. I think the years now have passed enough so that people are becoming more educated, that it's easier now, but to find somebody to help you with it. But I think in those times, it was very difficult. It was a shock.
In addition to that, both of us had the opinion that Jeff didn't know what he was talking about. He didn't understand what homosexuality was. This is what we thought, and we found out since how long we were. And then I especially went through quite a few years of denying the fact that he knew what he was talking about, that he was homosexual. And we didn't see him for a year, although we knew where he lived, and my wife would call him on the telephone about once a month. And it would be a very brief, pretty certain telephone conversation, that he was, at that time, he was going through a couple of things like we were. This is, he was blaming us for his, what he thought was his problem, and we were trying to, we were blaming ourselves. What did we do to cause this?
Now, remember the guilt. And what did I do wrong? How could we, I'm divorced, I thought. That's it. If I'd been there, if I'd been with him while he was growing up, I might have been able to change it, to make it all right, to make it better. I have failed in some way. The other part, and I'm not sure how much of it was there, but I felt it somewhat later, was embarrassment. You know, what would people think? What would they think about me? Will I be able to tell them about Dave? Those were the things I felt. A shock, pain. Maybe, oh God, why did this happen to me? And the other thing was the embarrassment. And an embarrassing thing for me, for the family, for him. I felt for him too. It's not easy to be gay. And And I felt compassionate, and I wanted to help, and I wanted to do what I could.
I was worried about Jeff and what he was doing and how he was going to progress. I don't think there was no occasion to talk to other family members or friends, you know, to tell them Jeff was gay. I don't think we ever worried that somebody would find out. But on the other hand, I think the reason my wife has said many times that you don't tell somebody because immediately you don't want somebody to start feeling sorry for you, feeling sorry for your son, that he's a freak or whatever it may be. And this is what a lot of people would think. So it was easier for us just to not talk about it with anybody and just let it go on. Jeff would come to the family functions with his brothers and their wives after they got married and the daughter, and nobody thought anything about it. Nobody talked about it. It just went on.
Probably the hardest part was not having someone to talk with about a really serious problem. And that's partly my own fear. I really did have people who would have listened to me, but I wasn't sure. And perhaps I didn't want to lay that burden on them either. So it helps to have somebody to share your more difficult experiences with.
I know that people do not like, or I have been around long enough to hear how people talk and react to a homosexual, and the fact that my son was going to have to endure those types of cruel educated views. It was just going to change something altogether about my fantasy that I built up in him about values and people. I knew that he was going to have to deal with something that I really couldn't help him that much with.
For me, the most difficult thing was feeling accepted by all my friends and all people that I know. I think it's that I want to feel accepted, but it's possibly started with wanting them to accept Charles. I don't know which came first. I want people that would take to like him. The person that he is, people are themselves. If they're going to be accepting of things, they have been about this too. And the ones who allow their religious beliefs to get in the way have been rather silent. And that does not mean, I know that they don't say me, but it has felt very empty. Our family was very close, but especially on holidays and birthdays and things. And we decided to tell them about a year after we found out about Charles. And it has caused a tremendous change in our social life with our family. And that hurts very much. I still have tremendous problems with that.
And some of my relatives, the two little brothers, for instance, they really don't want Charles or his son to come near them. That hurts with his child, of course.
It's been 3 or 4 years now. And Dave's my son, and I love him. And I'm interested in him, and I care about him. And so the fact that he is gay doesn't really seem all that important. It's important in that I know he's going to meet with discrimination, and he's going to endure some kind of suffering. And I can't help. There isn't isn't a heck of a lot I can do about that. But as far as the anguish, the pain, that's pretty much dissipated. My relationship with David has changed in that a barrier, an unseen barrier, has dissolved. I didn't know that he was gay, and obviously he had to keep some kind of pretenses, or he had to hold back, and that created a barrier. Now, that barrier is down, and he can talk about his relationships, and I can talk about my relationships, we can talk about the things that affect us deeply, and therefore we become closer together.
I don't know how it would be possible for me to be close to my children if I didn't know that they were gay. It's much more than simply a sexual orientation. It's a way of life. You know, it's an important part of who they are. And if they had to call me on the phone, as many gay people tell me that they do, and talk about trivialities like the weather, and how is anesthesia or something like that, and never talk about themselves, that's not a relationship. It's a contact. And I think sometimes it's even more painful. You know, when gay people talk to me about their fears of telling their parents that they have, what do you have to lose? You know, what do you have now? Look at what you have now, and look at what you might have. The worst that can happen is that this bad relationship will end. That's the worst that can happen. But the good thing that can happen is that you can build a good relationship.
Don and his first mother were together for 10 years, which is a good record for heterosexuals today. And he has been with Bud now for 4 years, and I love Bud and Don and Bill both very dearly, and we've grown to be quite a family. Don's lover's parents are from Rhode Island, and they were here 2 years ago, and we spent a whole weekend together, the whole family, all families together. It's just beautiful.
When my older daughter first bought her lover to the house, I was very, very uncomfortable and very, very upset. And that told me that I wanted this young woman to keep coming more often. I mean, somehow I knew that's the only way I would become more comfortable with the situation. And it may sound very unsympathetic, but this is what I tell parents, to say, I was so uncomfortable walking down Castro Street. And I said, well, do it more often.
Mm-hmm. They would ask about him. They would ask if Jeff was dating or he was going to be married or what, you know, whatever, and we would just say, no, he's going to be a bachelor, the way it looks, and each year as he got older, and kind of playing the field in his 5 years to say.
That's a lot nicer when people ask you that same question. Now, you know, how's it with Jeff when you're going to get married? You say, Jeff's not going to get married yet. And we get a lot of looks and surprises and questions, but that's the way it is. The same with a daughter, with a daughter Kathy. It makes a lot easier, a more honest life. You feel better about it.
I never was able to talk to my family until just the past couple of years when I've gone back to vacation. And now I'm very open about Don's gayness, because I too had to come out of the closet. And at my age, it's a little more difficult dealing with brothers and sisters in their 60s than the younger generation. Last year when I was back, I left and came home, told them I had to come home before the end of June, and they wanted to know why. And I said, because I have to be back to march in the parade. They said, what parade? The gay parade. Oh, I'm sorry.
I think that the largest group, the largest overwhelming majority of situations fall into this kind of category, where the gay child will say, well, I told my parents any number of years ago, We just don't talk about it. They tell me that they love me and we have a relationship of sorts, and it seems as if the parents hold the power. The parents are the ones who rule. You may come home for Christmas, but you may not talk about it. I want you to know this is very painful for us, and I don't want to hear about your lover, and your life is yours, and if that's what you want, and so forth. And I think that this is not satisfactory, even though so many gay people sort of settle for this. And it distresses me to feel that parents don't continue to process and deal with it. And I think the reason that I can see that they don't, it seems to me, is that on a level that is either conscious or unconscious, they feel that by withholding some of their love, some of their approval of their gay child, that they will somehow be able to turn their sexual orientation around. And they hold on to this tenaciously, refusing to read, to understand. And the only thing that they really succeed in doing, from what I've observed, is that they damage their own relationship with their child and their child's relationship. And it's very, very sad.
There are stages we all seem to have to go through at different rates, but we do have to go through stages, and one is the shock of first facing up to having a gay child, and the second is denial, and third is the guilt, and you go on from there, and I tell them that eventually they can come through to a point where they can accept it and even support it, but not to try to rush it and not to feel bad if they have negative feelings at first.
I mean, another problem maybe is when you talk to parents who have just found out about their children is to not lead them on that there's a chance their child is going to change. Because in our experience, I think almost 100% of the time, they don't expect them to be cured or turn around or change. In other words, don't put them in any false hopes because they really aren't there. It wasn't there, I don't. Well, the main thing is that anybody watching us, the way we're talking now, we didn't talk like this or feel this way 20 years ago. We went through, I think, what every other parent went through, and just through time, they brought us to the point that we're at. But we'll get up on the soapbox or march in the parade or go on television, whatever it is, that if we can do anything or say anything, it's going to help the gay people and the other parents. Because we haven't always been like this, but it goes through time.
If I could choose a sexual preference for my son, I'd choose heterosexuality because I think it's easier. But since he is gay, that's okay. He's a good person, and he will figure out a way to, he will manage, he will find a good life for himself. But I don't think as parents we have a choice. We take our children as they are, and we live with them and we love them, and we deal with them with who they are and not somebody that we would want them to be.
I think it's important that we listen to our children. That we let them know that we love them and make it as easy as possible for them to come out to us. They're frightened. They're going through a very, very difficult time in their life. And the thing that bothers me most and makes me feel very sad is the fact that all the years that, and Brian was 36 when I knew that he was gay, and I'm very sorry for all the wasted years before that. Mm-hmm.
just thinking of, it's too bad in so many families, there seems to be, at least in the beginning, a rejection of the gay person's partner. I know that in my family, although my cousin hasn't really come out to the whole family, her partner's always just been included in all the family things. And there's certain people in the family she's come out to, but everybody else, you know, they've been together for years and years, and everybody just sort of accepts, you know, Sandy is part of the family. And, you know, she comes to Christmas and Thanksgiving, da da da, and it's me and my husband and him and her husband and Patty and Sandy, and it's just no big deal. So even though nobody's really, everybody knows, but, you know, some things are a little still low key, but it's really neat that they can participate as a couple in the family.
But conversely, I've had experiences with heterosexual couples where the spouse or the girlfriend or boyfriend is not accepted by the family for one reason or another.
But they're not rejected because they are heterosexual, because of who they are. So because of because of personal dislike. Any other family experiences? Folks would like to share. Others.
I think it would have been nice if they would have had someone on this show that hadn't accepted it. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe showed a different perspective. All families don't accept it as well as these families have.
Well, they didn't at one point. I think that, you know, the point of the video was the parents coming out, and
yeah.
And when we have our meetings, why there's usually someone there who's just found out, and they're all upset and devastated, and something like that. It's a support group, and then it's interesting to see what happens as the months go by. We just meet once a month. Some areas they meet more often, but there's a lot of things that go on the phone. Yes.
Is it unusual for a parent to have more than one child?
No, it's not. Like Chuck and Dorothy, who are on there, Chuck and Dorothy Abramson, they have a gay son and a gay daughter, a lesbian daughter, and they have two straight sons who are married and have families. My secretary comes from a family of five, good family, and he's gay, his brother's gay, and he has a sister who's just come out, the youngest one. She's 38, just come out. And he has two brothers who are straight and have families.
That's a much higher percentage than the other ratio, 7%.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Greg Egertson, who is one of the people who's graduating the seminary next year. He's the oldest of six boys, and he's gay, and all of his brothers are straight. Seems to be something, you know, something that happens. You know, for one fellow in our church who's an architect who is gay, and he has a nephew who's gay, his sister's son.
Well, this is a little off the subject of this. I'm trying to remember is there an official story from the new ELCA, I guess, is on gay ministers? I know it's been the subject of a few articles in the Lutheran, but I'm a little confused about what the outcome of that was.
The statement is that gay people ought to be received in our congregations and so on like this, and a homosexual orientation is acceptable, but not the practice. In other words, you cannot, and practice isn't defined, you know, But what they really mean, what it really meant is that it's all right for you to be gay, but you must be celibate. You cannot engage in any kind of sexual relations. And the question gets pressed then because sexual relationships between a couple who love each other is a part of their relationship, but it certainly doesn't describe what their relationship is about. And in many cases, there are heterosexual relationships that are non-sexual, and many, many gay relationships that go on for many years are non-sexual for a variety of reasons that are not genitally sexual. That doesn't describe, just as those of you who are married, you know, would not describe the intimacy of your relationship with your spouse solely in terms of sexuality, in as genital relations, so it's also true of gay people. That's not what it's all about. As one young man said, the bishop told him that, well, why don't you remain celibate? And he says, well, how should I handle my desires to be with a man, to be have an intimate relationship? And he said, why don't you take a magazine and go to the bathroom? And Jim said, well, that's fine, but will the magazine have dinner waiting for me when I come home? So, because it's much more.
Yes. Last night we talked about, or you shared the cultural things that were going on as the Bible was written, and how homosexuality seemingly was part of that culture and accepted. And that, I guess my question is, when did society begin a rejecting punitive attitude towards homosexuals? And is this unique to the Western culture? Are there other cultures in the world today that openly accept homosexuals?
Yes. According to John Boswell, there was always some rejecting attitudes, you know, but it became especially strong in Western culture in the 16th, 17th century. It's hard to say what it was. Now, in the Native American culture, gay people have never been rejected. According to what I've been told, is that they were thought to have some magical kind of powers, and they were often medicine men. They had some extra spiritual powers that the others did not have. And
what about lesbian in the American culture?
I don't know about that. Something I know. And from what I have been told is that in Japanese culture, it was all right to be homosexual as long as you married and had a family. The important thing was to have children. But you have to remember too that it is only recently in Western culture that people got married because of feelings of eros, feelings of love. Marriages were usually arranged in our culture as they still are in Asian cultures. Yeah.
Are you coming from a point of view that homosexuality is more of a natural thing or a dysfunctional behavior?
I think it's a natural thing. I think it's just a variation. Just like left-handedness and right-handedness, which we used to condemn left-handedness. You know, some of you here are old enough to remember when that was done. Some people are attracted to members of the same sex, and their relationships are, and their life is every bit as full, and their possibility for intimacy and for family life and all of that is just as great as it is for heterosexual people, just as fulfilling. It's less, as we were saying, it's less than heterosexual. It's not, the heterosexual relationship is superior to homosexual relationship, is what you're saying.
At this point, yeah. Where I become coming from, I mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, and that's at that point, Susan, would say that. Yeah, I think that's where a good many of the folks are in the church. I mean, they'd have a lot of problem with a gay or lesbian person in the parsonage with a spouse.
But then again, you know, I'm sure there are pastors who've had extramarital relationships of a heterosexual nature, and their ministries have been able to continue beyond that. Mm-hmm.
As long as nobody found out.
No, not necessarily.
Oh, in some cases it has happened, yeah, but people say, well, yeah, okay. Yeah. Just a second, somebody else want to say something? Have you all had any experience in a family? Yes.
Homosexuals who marry women, mm-hmm. have children, and then decide they are homosexual. Have they been denying the fact that they've had these homosexual feelings?
Most cases, yes. Most every case, yes. That's the thing. It's another attempt at trying. In other words, if I find the right person, you know. A young man, one of the stories that he told me, he was going to one of our Lutheran colleges, and he was with a girl, and they were dating, and they were engaged. They became engaged, and he was, and they before they hadn't were married yet. For the first time, they had sexual relations, and. Reflecting on it afterwards, he realized what it was, and what he liked, what he appreciated about it, was the intimacy. The intimacy with another human being that he cared about very much. But he realized then that the intimacy that he had with a woman was not what he wanted, even though he really loved and cared about this woman very much, and he thought it would be very dishonest, and he broke off the engagement and told her the reason why, which I thought was very courageous on his part for a 21-year-old kid to do that. But at another time, and still even in this time, he probably would have gone through with it and said, well, this is it. You know, but there, that story is again and again. One of my assistant pastors was married for several years. Still loves his wife.
And they can be the best of friends.
Oh yes, but it's like, you know, it's like it's a denying of a very important part of one's being, of who we are.
I was just going to make a comment, which wasn't a family experience, but it seems to me that there's a bit of guilt by association, which all the people who grew up as, not teenagers, but older than that, in the 60s, I tend to be fairly negative about the 60s and the associated with drugs and riots and so forth. Mm-hmm. Of course, homosexuality came out as a topic during those times. And
as to civil rights and all those kinds of stuff.
You know, do your own thing, then shooting up drugs and maybe being gay. In other words, the guilt, the sort of negative connotation of homosexuality perhaps is in part because of the chronology of the excesses of the 60s. Not that there were not good things. I think rather fondly of the 60s myself. But I think that people in this video were somewhat older than I am, and therefore I think their generation tend to sort of lump all of this stuff into maybe dysfunctional behavior
Well, no, I don't think that's really a fair analysis of it. I think that it's true that gay liberation came out of the liberation movements of the civil rights struggle for blacks, but also the women's movement, so on like this, and there was in the 60s a re-examination of everything in and drugs, so on like this. But there were an awful lot of people who were re-examining everything that didn't participate in drugs. I mean, that were at Berkeley and that were at all the places and still got an education.
I mean, that's clear to me since I remember that. But the point is that I think, I mean, I've had discussions with other people who tend to describe the addiction to drugs and what they would call degenerate lifestyle, and that I think some of the comments in this video, in my opinion, the people would say at first, well, they'll get over it, as if it were an experimentation with drugs.
Yeah. Well, parents say that today. A lot of things. You see, the thing is that a man looking at it from a husband's point of view says, I can, you know, if it's another man, I can understand it, but I can't understand another woman. I can't understand it. It's beyond comprehension. The same with women. But they go, it's the same kind of process. There are there's a woman that I know that was married for 25 years to a very prominent attorney, and she was a very well-known educator, and in fact they were married longer than 20, I think it was closer to 30 years, and he finally came out. She's written a book called The Other Side of the Closet. I deal with that about once a month. Some parent comes into San Francisco. I get a call on the telephone, usually from a friend or a lover, that says, my lover has AIDS and his parents are coming and I have never met them and they don't know he's gay and they just know he's sick. And can you meet us at the hospital? I'm going to go pick them up at the airport.
How do you deal with a situation like that?
Well, you know, it's sort of like telling people an accident. You know, telling an accident and somebody's been killed. I mean, you just have to put it out there and let the thing go. And I've seen some marvelous things. I don't know if I share this story with you or not, but woman came in from Atlanta, Georgia. She actually lived in a suburb of Atlanta, Georgia. She was 72 years old. She was packed to go on a cruise. She's a widow, Southern Baptist, this kind of a thing. And we met her at the hospital, and her son's lover was there. And she was furious. Why does my son have AIDS? Why doesn't he have AIDS? Why doesn't Neil have AIDS? Why doesn't, why is my son gay? Why is my son? She was angry. And she had to absorb all this. She was angry, too, because she, Mr. Cruz, I mean, it was all wrapped up, you know, to get the whole thing all right. And she was just furious. And she talked and she talked and she talked, well, and did all kinds of things and wouldn't let his lover out of the room, out of the hotel room where the two of them are dying, or the one of them was dying, and her son was dying, and the friends kept coming and kept coming and kept coming, and they wouldn't let her get away with it. They said, come on, whatever her name was, I've forgotten now. We're going to a group tonight. We're going to a meeting tonight. What kind of meeting is it? It's a meeting of parents whose children are dying of AIDS. We have all kinds of support systems in San Francisco because of the epidemic. So they went there, and she was there. And she went through that, and she was there about 7 or 8 days, and her son went home from the hospital, and then they got home. He was very, very close to death, and they propped him up in bed, and they had a party. And she was sitting over there kind of by herself in this small apartment, and his friends were around. And this one gay man, who's about 6'5 and weighs about 300 pounds, came over to her and said, "You look like you need some tender loving care," and just embraced this 72-year-old woman.